Welcome to the Common Good Podcast, where change agents, social innovators, faith leaders, business leaders, community activists come together at the intersection of remembering, belonging, and a local sense of place. I'm your host, Troy Bronsing from The Hive in Cincinnati, Ohio. The framework for our conversations is the relationship of three scholars whose life's work have shaped and informed one another. Walter Brueggemann, Peter Block, and John McKnight are notable thought leaders in their own rights, but at this point in their careers, their work has begun to shape the others. In fact, their friendship really becomes almost a model for how the common good shows up in local, tangible, relational ways. Walter Brueggemann is a highly published biblical scholar whose work is at that intersection of remembering text and the subversive ways that the prophetic imagination relates to empire. Peter Block is a scholar that has worked at the intersection of community organizing and belonging and consulting and really the structure of how relationships take place. And they're joined by John McKnight, who is both the kind of innovator and founder of asset-based community development and speaks with real specific ways over the course of his career about the importance of place and relationship and the way that gifts show up in very personal ways in our community.
Getting to the scale where our humanity can be revealed. And you have made so clear to me how what I'm really talking about and had inadequate understanding is the world of the personal. It isn't until you get to a certain scale that the personal can appear. It's just like an equation. I just see it all of your work. I missed it. I mean, I just missed it.
Each episode of this first season will be conversations between these three, in some ways, kind of grumpy old men, these visionaries who can complete each other's sentences, are gregarious, and also humble in the way that their work has informed one another. We'll be dropping in on conversations they have and just kind of grabbing some morsels here and there. To start today's episode, we're going to jump off with an invitation that our producer Joey framed to them, asking Peter, Walter, and John how they identify with these kind of key points of remembering and belonging and place. We're in Peter's kitchen around his table. You can hear some of the wind from the outside, and we begin with Peter's response.
You know, I can comment on yours, Walter.
Yeah.
Lift the burden from your shoulders. And that when I ask myself what attracts me to your way of thinking, and in addition to the friendship, is you gave me a memory. I thought I was a modern man. And I thought I came out of nothing.
Yeah.
And I had created my life out of nothing.
Yeah.
And when you talked about and do talk about these sacred old stories, and I can identify with it. I can identify, you know, being a Jew in Egypt. I can also identify with being Pharaoh. To me, that's not a big leap.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
You don't argue against patriarchy most of your life unless you're good at it.
Look at Joseph.
Right.
And I just felt that it gave me a memory. I have a history now.
Yeah.
I am born of a time in which you speak so efficiently.
And this is Walter speaking.
Well, you could say that what the devil wants to do is to talk us out of our memory.
Yes.
Why would the devil want to do that? Why would you be an advocate for remembering?
Well, I think without memory, one is completely exposed to the pressures of the greed system. So in Deuteronomy, it says, when you come into the promised land with all of its vineyards and water and wheat and barley, take heed lest you forget. Because the way it's put there, if you forget, you will return to Egypt. That is, you will be back in bondage. So that tradition, everything depends on remembering, which, of course, the Jews then took over. And
the Jews worked hard to keep that going, didn't they?
That's right. And I don't know whether you know the story of Zacchaeus in the Gospel of Luke, but Jesus sees this guy climbed a sycamore tree to see Jesus, and Jesus addresses, he's a tax collector for Rome. He's exploiting Jews. He's a Jew, but he's exploiting Jews to send money to Rome, and then he skims off the top of it.
He gets his interest or his surplus.
That's right. And they have this conversation, but at the end of the conversation, Jesus says to him, "You are a son of Abraham." And what he's doing is giving him back his rootage and memory that he had forgotten. He had to forget it in order to sign on with the Roman Empire. So it's a perfect case study in what happens with amnesia.
And usury is a form of forgetting also.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Yep.
In fact, I can make money on money, which is the ultimate about electronic relationships.
Yeah.
And you know,
that's right.
Now most of the money is made on money.
That's right. Yeah. So neighborly relationships are sacrificed through the process of monetization.
Yes.
And you would say the monetization is the loss of memory.
Well, I would say the loss of memory permits it.
Permits it.
Yeah. Because memory, the kind of memory we're talking about, gives one restraint in the presence of one's neighbors. And when that memory that restrains is gone, then you can devour your neighbor by tax cuts.
Yeah, right.
Then the devil has her way.
That's right. That's right. Yep.
And John's jumping in now.
Memory also is a source of useful knowledge and humility. Somebody said to me, "How did you end up this way?" And I didn't think a second. I said, "Well, I'm a McKnight. How do I know? I had a story."
Mm-hmm.
At 17, I got when I went to North or was admitted to Northwestern, fraternities and sororities started sending me letters of come and pledge we can do this stuff. I never considered it. Why? Because the McKnights believed that secret societies were evil. I got that from the Bible. But I got it from our history.
Right, right.
And the story does a lot of things, but it transfers knowledge that is useful.
Right.
And to this day, the most predatory experience young people could have is in our fraternities. I mean, what's going on there? It's just, just a constant fight to keep the evil down by administering the visible evil.
Yes, right.
So what's your sense of place? How do you respond to that framing?
I'm not sure. I just want that to be my...
What would be a more precise way of...
Local.
Local.
Personal. Yeah. The scale, getting to the scale where our humanity can be revealed. And you have made so clear to me how what I'm really talking about and had inadequate understanding is the world of the personal. Mm-hmm. It isn't until you get to a certain scale that the personal can appear. It's just like an equation. And I just see in all of your work, I missed it. I mean, I just missed it. And now I see how much more being conscious of the personal brings into relationship building. I've gotten this far without it, but it's a great, great contribution.
I think what you say about local is walkable, reachable, touchable, sensible.
Yeah, sensible.
And I think where the place comes in is the only, where else do you find it?
Yeah.
And you need to be grounded and located somewhere. I think the place here is not that the place matters, but it's a locating device for you.
And right.
The neighborhood language, I mean, that's how you found us with John's neighborhood language.
That's right. That's exactly.
I would say the neighborhood is big enough.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's big enough. I do. Yep. I would put gift-mindedness if I was going to have to put something on your name today.
Yes.
On John's. Yeah. That was life-changing for me.
Overall,
was,
I would too.
Was the gift mindedness as opposed to the deficiency.
Yeah.
Of, what would affection you put, I always had for deficiency.
What would you put for yourself?
I think belonging is a good word for me.
Yeah.
When I wrote the community book, I'm glad I thought of the title, Structure of Belonging. That's my love of discipline.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And my pornography has been that if you follow these practices, you're going to get closer to people than if you don't. And I think I know what those practices are.
Yeah, and you're right.
And
I've discovered that.
Well, I'm just saying that you can do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And some people experience it, though, as artificial, as forced intimacy.
Well, of course.
And so
that's
the ambivalence about it.
But you never want to pay attention to some people.
That's great.
The ones
that is really great. It took me decades to learn that. Because wherever I was, I always picked the most stubborn, resistant person and thought, that's why I'm here. And I wasted years of my life fighting with the devil.
Yeah, right, right.
And at some point I learned to say, when the devil spoke, good point.
Yeah. I've noticed that. Yes,
you made me right.
Be careful, I'm going to take your side. That's my form of violence.
The movie A Wonderful Life, did you see that in the paper this morning?
No.
Had an op-ed piece on Wonderful Life, that it's the perfect Christmas movie. Of course it is. But the guy said, I've seen it so many times, I started rooting for the banker.
Exactly.
You've been listening to the Common Good Podcast, a conversation at the intersection of remembering, belonging, and place. Our conversation picks back up in Peter Block's kitchen with John McKnight and Walter Brueggemann sitting together around the table. In the background is a bunch of the art that Peter has collected over the years, including these painted masks that look like they're like handmade and from a variety of places around the world. Peter poses a question about the way that this alternative narrative is performed, this act of neighboring is performed. We're going to drop right back into the conversation now.
Now, I want to check something out first. So when people ask me about things or your work or what we're doing together, I always have the alternative to Pharaoh's Egypt, to a predatory economy. I'm getting clear as time goes on how this economic system produces by design social injustice, social inequity. And I like the word equity better than justice, because justice sounds like something you have to go to court to talk about.
Yeah.
Or equity, you go to the bank.
Yeah.
That's the equity. And I like the idea of going to the bank.
Right. Yeah. Right.
All right.
Yep.
And so the neighborliness, the wilderness, is no visible means of support. And that's what we're calling neighborliness.
I'm sorry?
That's neighborliness. We say, what's there?
Yes.
And the idea, instead of the manna from heaven, which it may still be coming from heaven, and God we trust is on our dollar bill,
right.
We will find in this hospitality, generosity, reciprocity, whatever, with all that we need to for our well-being.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
And that's, and so what we're, what I'm interested in, I asked you once, Walter, what's the journey like? What's the transformation like? What's the methodology of this transformation?
Yeah.
And I remember your answer. You probably have a different one now. But you said dance.
Oh. Did I?
You did.
You said, well, that was inspired.
You can take it back if you want.
Yeah. Isn't that, Illich had that same answer to me. He would say, this is one of those things where you have to learn, John, to dance with the devils. Now, he got this because in Mexican villages, it's a very common holiday in which people, you may, yeah, have devil's masks.
These are all the pictures of the devil on, yeah, on the wall.
Yeah, and they have in the center of the village square, they're wearing the devil's mask, and the devils are, you know, evil and aggressive. And the people stand on the outside in a circle, and then people dash in and do a quick dance. And people figure out all kinds of ways of dancing with these devils. And he used that as he thought.
So what would that mean now? Are we dancing with the devil in this conversation? Well, what does the devil mean in a contemporary term?
Well, the devil is there. This is tragedy is there. How do we deal with that is the nature, the unhappy nature necessarily
of being human?
Of being human, right? And that is, we learn to dance with the devil. Is the way the trouble is, we think the devil can be changed. I think he's not thinking, it's just these villagers are not thinking they're changing the devil. They're learning to live with the devil differently.
So what I get in my mind, I don't know if this is right at all, but I want to check it, that the dance would be an act of teasing and defiance in front of the devil. Is that right?
I think so. That's the way I saw it.
Yeah.
So
I think if you think that the predatory economic system, I think what the devil wants to do is to talk us out of our humanness. And then the predatory economic system is one articulation of the devil. That wants to talk us out of our humanness and our capacity to be neighbors.
Yes. Yeah.
So when we have acts or conversations or imaginations about neighborliness, we are dancing defiantly in front of the devil, saying we will not permit the devil to define the way we live.
We are not afraid of you.
That's correct.
That's one of the things they're saying.
That's right.
You're not going to control our lives.
That's right.
We learn how to dance with you. You're
that's
here.
Right. Yeah. That's right. Yep.
Yeah, I like that.
You know, in Goethe's Faust.
For those who aren't familiar, Goethe's Faust is this epic novel about a man who makes a deal with the devil, basically exchanging his soul for unlimited knowledge and for worldly pleasures.
So Faust needed the devil. And you think Faust wanted power, wanted sexuality with Gretchen, whatever. That, in one version, that's not what he wanted. What he wanted was economic development for the well-being of all.
That's good.
Yeah.
And he had the whole thing put together on the coastline. All right. I don't know, it was resorts, vacation homes, you know, multi-use properties. But there was one couple who owned the lighthouse, and they refused to sell. And so he goes to the devil, and he says, the whole thing is dependent on getting this property. Otherwise, all my good works will be for naught. And the devil says, do you want me to do something about that? And he says, yes, I do. And so the devil goes off and comes back in 3 hours. He says, the land is yours. That was quick, and He said, what did you do? Oh, we killed the people and stole the land. You what? You killed that couple? And the devil says something, you know, better than I can say it, but that's you developers are that way. You want your noble outcomes, but you want to wash your hands of doing anything wrong.
The dirty part.
Yeah. I just love that.
Yeah.
Because it's so contemporary.
Yeah. You know? That's right.
This has been the Common Good Podcast, a conversation at the intersections of place and belonging and remembering. You can learn more about the work of Peter and John and Walter, as well as the Common Good Fellowship and daily food for thought emails at commongood.cc. Common Good is a collaborative production of The Hive, a center for contemplation, art, and action, and Common Change, eliminating personal economic isolation. We're produced by myself, Troy Bronsink, as well as the very talented and highly time-invested Joey Taylor. Music is written and produced by Jeff Gorman. We look forward to more conversations ahead. And whatever you do, don't forget the timeless advice of best-selling author Dr. Walter Brueggemann.
But you never want to pay attention to some people.